This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome. Edition of Newsmakers at Noon. Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton. It sounds like we got a little bit of a
gremlin. I think we have some gremlins today, Hunter.
Uh-oh.
You know, a little bit
like,
of gremlins.
They we have to play weird... these games sometimes.
Yeah, so we may have to deal with that. We've got weird weather going on, so it could be something to do with that. So you give me, we'll just kind of, you know, we'll let each other know if the gremlins strike, and then we can squash them with mm-hmm. The like, you know, one of those electronic tennis rackets that you kill bugs with.
Oh, yeah. I need to get a few of those. With this mild, you know, winter thus far, the bugs are crazy right now.
I'm waiting for, let's get a good freeze, man. I want them all. The stink bugs, man, I want them all to die.
I was noticing the other day.
I can't stand them.
We had on that kind of trending stuff when you're, you know, on Amazon and stuff.
Yeah.
Ant traps are like massively trending right now in purchases.
Ew, mm-hmm. It's gross. And because we got to jump into the show, but when you realize insects, really, if they were like two or three times bigger, we'd all be gone mm-hmm. because they rule the world. They rule the world. Thank goodness they're the size of your pinky now.
That's right. I have to tell my kids.
And that's a big carpenter ant.
Yeah, for the size, they are the strongest creatures you will ever find.
Yes, they are. Thank goodness they're very, very small. Okay, we are going to jump in again. We're going to work with the gremlins if we got them today, which we haven't had them in a while. I can't say I miss them, though. But today is Real Estate Insight Tuesdays, and with us today in the studio, Amy McLeod from the McLeod Group, Keller Williams, and Elizabeth Smith from the Smith Mortgage Group. Ladies, it's great to see you.
Glad to be here.
We always love having you. We always learn so many interesting things from you. And I know you've been experiencing this weird weather and then the bugs, too.
Mm. Yeah.
Hate stink bugs. Anyway, all right. I need to get over it. Anyway, so let's jump right in. Elizabeth, it's been a little bit since we've had you on, and we're getting into spring, and people are starting to, you know, they're kind of like, okay, they're getting out, they're shaking out the cobwebs, thinking, okay, I kind of think I want to, maybe if I'm going to make that move, I'm going to do it, but I need to get pre-approved. I got to talk to somebody. So I'm going to go online, or I'm going to listen to an ad on YouTube, a sponsored ad, and I'm going to hear from 1-800, I'm a lender. And that, wow, that sounds great. Is it really, though?
Oh, boy, is it not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've become basically, humanity is at convenience, right? Everybody wants to click a button, push button, get mortgage, that kind of a thing. And so we've become very much thinking that, oh, well, that's all it takes. And I'll tell you that there's a difference between being pre-approved and a pre-qualification. A pre-qualification, a lot of these lenders will say, oh, I'm pre-qualified. And all they're doing is you're entering in some basic information. You're putting in, I have a job and I make this much money and I have, I want a payment around this and I think my credit score is this. And they go, pop, here you go, you're pre-qualified. That is as good as the paper it is written on. It means nothing.
Oh, okay.
So pre-qual means nothing. If you say, hey, I've already been pre-qualified, a realtor is going to ask you for a pre-approval letter. And what that is, that mm-hmm. means that you've applied with a lender. They have received your income documents. They've received your ID. And you are now turning in your bank statements. They're reviewing your work history. They're pulling your credit report. They can do a soft credit pull, but they're looking at everything, reviewing it. And then they're issuing a pre-approval that says, hey, Ms. Realtor, or Mr. or Mrs., I'm talking great today. It must be the bugs. So they then...
It's the gremlins.
It's the gremlins. Yes. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. So then they're going to be able to take that pre-approval letter and then go look at houses with you, because they have to make sure that the person that they're taking into someone's house actually can financially afford it. You know, if you're listing a house for sale, the last thing you want is someone randomly walking through that doesn't have the financial ability to actually buy your house.
Right.
So that pre-approval process generally is going to take a little bit of time. It takes you time to gather it and everything. So people will say, well, then I'll just go to, you know, those online lenders. Now, mind you, a lot of these online lenders actually aren't lenders. They are lead capture systems. And what that means is that they're going to grab your information.
Oh.
That's like, oh, hey, look at this interest rate. They grab your information. They then take that information and then they try to sell it to a lender. So you think you're getting a high-end quality pre-approval, but what you're ending up with is a call center employee at $20 an hour that may not know how to actually structure your loan the right way. So this is one of those things. It's kind of like WebMD. It's great to get an idea, but you automatically, no matter what, you have cancer, right? WebMD is always going to go, oh, it might be cancer. So that's like the worst case scenario, right? So in these 1-800 number, like click and get your loans, it's not the best thing. You're not going to talk to the same person twice. You're not going to be able to text them on the weekend and go, hey, by the way, I just found this house. So we just, it's one of those things where you really kind of like, if you have a lawyer or a doctor, you want that level of expertise. So stay away from the online lenders. The pull-through ratio, the title companies, I've asked them all, the pull-through ratio, meaning that that file actually closes, is so minimal, unless it's a refi. A lot of people have had good luck, but on purchase transactions, your offer, and Amy can attest to this, an offer coming in that has an online lender pre-approval is probably not going to be as strong as one that has a local lender that you see in the grocery store.
Yeah, 100%. We want somebody that we can reach out to and get a hold of. With so many of these from the 1-800 numbers just absolutely fail. And the challenge is that, you know, you have a call center where people call into, and then they're you know, that's usually where you put your newest employees to vet them. And so they don't always give you the best advice. And there's one very famous one with, you know, you think they had jet engines on their vehicle, but we haven't had one successfully close yet. So we see that kind of a pre-approval or pre-qualification come from that particular lender, and we're countering with find someone local.
Well, and you always know just the phrase call center puts the vision of a mass warehouse somewhere in the middle of nowhere with nothing but cubicles, and they have no clue what rules and regulations may apply to the state of Oregon.
Correct. Usually they're out of the Midwest. And I will say, I actually look at the licensing system that says, hey, come through. You basically, when you get licensed as a lender, it shows up on the NMLS. And what we see is in certain areas, Detroit, Michigan specifically, because there's two really big call centers there from two really big online lenders. And I can pull the work history. And literally these call center employees, they're licensing them constantly. They're usually like out of college, or they're going to college out there. So they're getting a part-time job working a call center. And they just got their license. And then I click on it and I'm like, I can see exactly where they were working last week. And a lot of times it's a pizza parlor or a shoe store. So are you trusting the largest debt and largest asset of your life to some call center employee for convenience? That just sounds crazy to me.
Well, and we all know that call centers have massive turnover.
Huge.
In terms of the
employees.
Huge
turnover.
Maybe last a week or two, and then they're gone, and you're finding someone else to talk to.
Exactly. You're never going to talk to the same person twice. And then, honestly, it's like you're a self-employed borrower. You have some complicated things, which, by the way, everybody has a little complication on every transaction. That's normal. Like, it's not scary. It's totally normal. So we know how to look at it and go, oh, you know what, if we send that one Fannie Mae, they have a different set of rules than Freddie Mac. If you don't have experience doing this loan, you have no idea that if you just change which underwriting system, you may get a waiver on one and you may get total problems on the other. This comes from long-term experience. You got to know the rules.
Yeah, we see that quite a bit. These call centers, the best they can do is you have to be vanilla, or they just can't handle it. And so we want like Elizabeth on our files. And I don't think I can emphasize enough that our contracts recently changed, the real estate contracts, requiring that for a buyer to come forward and present an offer, they have to come forward representing that they are pre-approved. That means their personal package has gone in front of an underwriter and they have been given the seal of approval to go forward as a buyer. So whether some of these 1-800 number systems are even equipped to do that or are willing to do that, we'll have to be digging in if we get those. But that's the new rules, that sellers are expecting you to show up and the underwriter has already said you're good to go find a house.
Yeah. So that sounds like what we need to do. Let's go ahead and jump out to a break. We're going to try and mess with these gremlins a little bit more. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and the Perlin Mill. Uh-oh, it sounds like we might...
All right, welcome back, everybody.
Uh-oh, the gremlins are messing with you, Denise. The gremlins are messing with you. You know, welcome back. It is Tuesday, so that means Real Estate Insights with Amy and Elizabeth. And I'm going to have to take over for you, Denise. So the big question of the day, will this housing market ever crash?
Hey, that's a good one, Hunter. It's a fair question. And people remember what happened during the housing crash of 08 when homes dropped dramatically. But the reality is that today's housing market is very different from what we saw back then. So we have to look at the three biggest factors that influence whether a housing market could crash. One is supply, lending practices, and then homeowner equity. So one of the main reasons experts say a nationwide housing crash is unlikely is because we still have a shortage of homes. And for more than a decade now, the U.S. has not built enough houses to keep up with population growth. So that's created demand for homes across many markets. In a typical balanced housing market, there'd be about 5 to 6 months of homes available for sale. But in our market, we're finally creeping up above 3 months on average. And so when supply is limited and demand remains steady, then prices tend to remain relatively stable. So that doesn't mean prices can't slow down or even decline. And actually, we talked about last time we were here that in some areas it had. So real estate always moves in cycles, and it depends on your price point. But a widespread crash requires an oversupply of homes. That's what happened in 08.
Yeah, I remember that 2008, I was over in Central Oregon. And leading up to it, virtually within a 2-year period, the value of most houses over there doubled.
Mm-hmm.
And there was new neighborhoods being built left and right. Anywhere mm-hmm. there was land, something was being built on. And then all of a sudden, when that bubble burst, the value of houses went down about 60% real quick, almost overnight. And I remember whole housing developments, they just stopped mid-production right. and just left.
Right, right. Well, here in the Valley, 60% that you guys were heated up by a lot of California money. Here mm-hmm. in the Valley, we dropped about 35%. We've recovered all of that and more. But the second factor is lending standards. So in the years leading up to 08 crash, the standards were very different. Many buyers were getting loans with little documentation of income. We called them liar loans. Small down payments, adjustable rates. Buyers were even able to qualify for mortgages that they realistically couldn't afford. And so when the economy slowed and the housing prices stopped rising, those loans began to fail. And that's when we had the foreclosures and the short sales that created a large number of distressed homes. And that oversupply is what helped push prices down really quick. So today the standards are much stricter. The buyers have to provide documentation of income. That's why you need Elizabeth to make sure you're checking all the boxes. And that's why we always say it doesn't hurt. Even if you're not ready for like a year out, check in. Let us get you to Elizabeth so that you can find out what are the things that you need to address to be ready. Because of those stricter requirements, the vast majority of homeowners today are in a much stronger financial position than homeowners were before the last crash. And then lastly, that brings us to the third factor, homeowner equity. That's the difference between what a homeowner owes on their mortgage and what the home is worth. So over the past several years, home values have increased significantly in many parts of the country. And now many homeowners have substantial income or equity in their homes. And that creates a financial cushion. So even if the home values were to decline slightly, in some markets, many homeowners would still have positive equity. I think that's really important for people in Salem and Kaiser to remember because we talked about last time that prices have flattened for the last 3 years. We haven't made any real significant mm-hmm. movement there. And so I think people are finding themselves disappointed, but we need to look at, you know, what is your equity and what is your purpose in moving? So during the crash years, many homeowners had little equity and some owed more, and that made it difficult for them to sell, but that's different than now. So another important factor is mortgage interest rates, and they rose significantly over the past couple of years. And higher rates have made monthly payments more expensive, and that's cooled buyer demand. But what we're seeing now in many markets is not a crash, but what we call a normalization. This is a normalized real estate market. We're at 6% approximately, and that's the average over a 30-year period, 6%. So homes take a little longer to sell than they did during the pandemic boom. Buyers are much more thoughtful, and sellers need to price their homes carefully, but houses are still selling. So it's important to remember that real estate's local. And national headlines sometimes divert us. They talk about the housing market as if it behaves the same everywhere, and it really doesn't. So that's why looking at your local housing market is much more helpful than focusing on national headlines. And remembering that real estate is a long-term investment, okay? Mm-hmm. Home values may rise and fall over short periods of time, but historically we've increased over the long run. So for you buyers waiting for a dramatic crash, that means you're missing opportunities right now, as we have seen. Yeah. And for sellers, the current environment still offers strong demand in many communities, especially for homes that are priced right and presented properly. So based on the key factors, a crash is highly unlikely. And what we're seeing instead is a housing market that's adjusting and stabilizing. So if folks are curious about what's happening specifically in their neighborhood, whether you're thinking about buying, selling, or simply keeping an eye on your home's value, we offer what's called a listing alert for buyers. We also offer a market report for sellers. And if there's a seller, you know, market report is based on the averages. But if a seller wants to know what's going on with their house, then we have a quick 10-minute conversation about features of their home. And then we give them a value range that gives them a more accurate idea. So,
well, that's helpful because a lot of people will go out to, like, you know, the 1-800 lenders of real estate, which is isn't that like Zillow and Redfin and all that. And then Zillow will come back with this amazing, it's worth $700,000 when it's really worth maybe $500,000 because it doesn't take into account all those variables.
Correct. Yeah, well, they were gone after by the federal government, and they were required, they were found at fault, and they were required in their website deep down and many layers deep to disclose how often they're wrong. And they are wrong with their Zestimate 85% of the time. And of course, we laugh.
Holy crimoli.
Right. We laugh because the founder of Zillow, his house was up on Queen Anne Hill up in Seattle. It was the Zestimate was $1.1 million, and he ended up selling it for $900,000. So if you can't even get your founder's Zestimate right, please don't rely on the Zestimate. Look at those types of pricing tools as ways that you can look at the direction, much like we watch the Dow Jones. You know, that's not the stocks that are in our portfolio necessarily, but we can see the direction that it's going. And that's how we should look at those types of valuations, not for the exact number.
Sounds
well, that's a helpful tool to have then, to be able to get that with a 10-minute phone call to kind of give you an idea then, because you don't want to be running off of bogus numbers, frankly.
Right. Exactly. We want people to know where they are. Everybody wants to know that. Like, I like going on to Kelly Blue Book and knowing what's the value of my car, right?
Yeah, now. Right.
Yeah. So that's the service that we offer. And like we say, we'll be here when you're ready. So I don't have any handcuffs. I always reassure people of that. No duct tape, no handcuffs. So you can call into our office and get good information, and then we'll be here when you're ready.
Do people have that fear that they're going to be, because I made that phone call and I asked that question, now I'm locked in?
You know, I don't think they would probably say it that plainly, but that is definitely the way they're behaving, as if, you know, oh my gosh, if I call you and ask you a question, you know, that somehow we can schnooker them into doing something they don't want to do. And that's, I suppose there are people that are that gifted. I'm just not.
Well, the ironic part of all of that is that, you know,
a phone call to you and they're feeling that way, but yet they will go on to Zillow or Redfin or 1-800-LENDER, which literally adds them to massive lists. So now they're just seeing nothing but these things pop up on their Facebook feeds and their internet and their phone. I mean, I'm just
texting
going.
Texting and calling you.
They're willing to do it digitally, but they're not willing to do it with a phone call. Oh, yeah.
Oh, those are outlawed now. Did you hear that? The spam,
what is that?
The trigger leads got outlawed March 5th. The trigger leads are what they, the credit bureaus, whenever we would pull a credit report, they would sell it to all of our competitors. They did let the Mortgage Bankers Association push through legislation, and they are now outlawed as of March 5th. It was just earlier this week. But if you have an existing relationship with the lender, so like if you come and get a loan through me and I pull your credit and you've got a loan with Rocket Mortgage, Rocket still can call you because the do not call list actually, when you have a business relationship with a company, they can still call you, but they can't just sell it out into the world like they were doing, which was like driving me crazy because I recently was started my own refi and I got like all these phone calls and text messages and I'm like, stop. Like,
I don't need you. I don't need you.
I think I know what I'm doing.
When you block it, they just change the number. And then they leave you voicemails. Stop calling me and leaving me voicemails.
Yeah, and the text messages, they act like they're your buddies. And then that's like violating like three federal laws. I have a friend who's a regulator at the state of Oregon. I'm always screenshotting things and sending them to him. And he's like,
yeah,
I'll give them a quick call. Like, spook this one.
Well, the real brilliant ones send you all their spam. Lending spam after you've closed your deal, your refinance or your new purchase before this was illegal.
It's wild.
All the different tricks, and it's absolutely maddening, and it's like whack-a-mole because you block one and then another one pops up. All right, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour news. So far the gremlins seem to be behaving a little bit, but we'll see. Again, it's Real Estate Insights with Amy McLeod and Elizabeth Smith. Come on back on the other side.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We're talking all things real estate today with Amy McLeod from the McLeod Group, Keller Williams, and Elizabeth Smith from the Smith Mortgage Group. And we are hopefully keeping the gremlins at bay. They're really annoying today. Are there sunspots or something today?
Who knows? What's going on out in the atmosphere? Part of this weird spring, winter, whatever you want to call it.
The legislature's not in session anymore, so it can't be that.
No, but the gremlins don't have anything to do now that they're not down there.
You think the rats and the mice have all left there and they're chomping on wires and stuff around town
now? The demons aren't stirring it up at the legislature, so they're out here.
They're out here bugging us. All right, Amy, let's go ahead and let's talk about what's going on with inventory.
Yeah, that's a really good question that people want to know about. Are there enough homes for buyers, and is inventory improving? And what does that mean if you're thinking about buying or selling? So let's go big picture. Across the country, housing supply has been tight, as we said, for several years. One of the biggest reasons is something called the lock-in effect or the golden handcuffs. We've got millions of homeowners, including me, that refinanced when interest rates were, well, around 3%. If you're a veteran, you were down in the twos. Mm. And those homeowners are now reluctant to sell because if they move, they have to replace it with, let's just triple or double that mortgage interest rate to 6%. So that's slowed the number of houses coming onto the market. Then another factor is construction. And Oregon, like much of the country, simply hasn't built enough homes, not to mention we have all the roadblocks to builders.
Yeah, in Oregon specifically.
Oh my gosh. So housing analysts say that the state may need hundreds of thousands of new homes over the next two decades to keep up with demand. So when you combine fewer sellers with slower construction, the result is limited supply. And if we bring it closer to home, Salem, Kaiser, Marion County, and Polk County, we want to look at those individually. So Salem remains one of the more affordable metros in Oregon compared with Portland or Bend. I know we like to complain around here, but right now, I know, the average home value in Salem is about $457,000. Now, that's average.
Okay.
And that's stable. It's been stable over the last 3 years. Recent data also shows that homes are selling a little slower than during the pandemic. The median price is around $426,000, and homes are taking roughly 91 days to sell on average. Now, that's up from 75 in 2025.
Okay.
So that's actually an important signal about supply. Higher days on the market means over 91 days there was more inventory that came on. So during the intense seller market of 2021 and 2022, homes sold sometimes in hours. Now they're staying on the market longer, and we're inching towards 4 months of inventory, giving buyers a little more time and a little more negotiating power. Sellers, you need to listen up. We are not in the unicorn years anymore. Okay. Yeah. So you must be clear about your motivations for moving, because if you're not ready to compete in the beauty contest, you should just plan on staying still. And this does not mean that we have an oversupply. A balanced market typically has been about 5 to 6 months of housing supply. Most Oregon markets, including Salem, are still operating below that level. But we've got this factor of, you know, the golden handcuffs. Now, let's talk about Marion and Polk County. They make up much of the Mid-Valley housing market. And over the past several years, the region has seen significant population growth. I wonder why. Salem is the state capital, and the area offers relatively lower housing prices compared with Portland, and that's attracted buyers relocating from Portland. But a lot of our people who live closer to the city center are evacuating. And because of that, thousands of hands have changed locally in the past year alone, with more than 2,400 residential sales recorded in the Salem market over a recent 12-month period. This period. And at the same time, construction has tried to catch up. But what they include in construction is a wave of new apartment construction occurring here in these two counties. In fact, more than 4,200 apartments were added to the Salem metro area in the last 5 years.
But that's rentals.
That's rentals. Yeah, but it's housing. We're talking housing.
Okay.
And so that means roughly one out of every eight apartments locally is newly built. Now, one of the things to be aware of in new construction less than 15 years old, landlords are not bound by the rent caps that older properties are.
They're not.
No, they're not. So new construction has been slowing because building costs and financing costs remain high. And frankly, we've gotten saturated with apartments. So we've got more homes for sale than during the peak pandemic years. Still not enough to fully meet demand. Inventory in Salem increased at certain points recently, with listings rising nearly 10% most recently. But homes also started sitting on the market longer as buyers became more price sensitive. So here in Kaiser, a smaller market than Salem, but we're very connected. Kaiser offers the suburban neighborhoods, strong schools, and easy access to I-5. So demand here remains strong, although we're starting to see some signs that sellers are having to pay attention. Between the price point of $395 and $425, there recently were 12 houses for sale. Available. Yeah, that's, you know, for most people, that's a starter range.
Right.
So Kaiser is still well-priced homes, move quickly. We're definitely noticing that the ones that move the quickest are HGTV ready. So there's just no getting around it. And that's sometimes hard for sellers to swallow because they still have that muscle memory from the unicorn years, 2018 to 2023, where you could just command whatever price you wanted and not have to do anything. Those days are over. So we have to price correctly and present properly. And where the housing supply is headed, a few trends to watch. If mortgage rates decline even slightly, more homeowners may decide to sell. But what I'm hearing in my most recent economic reports is we are where we're going to be probably for the next year. This event in Iran, watching inflation, gas prices, all of that is going to affect. Second, Oregon policymakers are pushing for more housing development statewide, but is that housing that families are looking for? We'll see. And third, buyers are becoming more cautious about affordability, which means we may continue to see a balanced market, which compared with the fast-moving pandemic years. Bottom line is housing supplies in our area is improving slightly, but we still are in a market where demand currently is tepid because of interest rates and the cost of houses in light of interest rates, and inventory remains moderated. So for buyers, that means you've got opportunities to get out there and ask for closing costs in some price points, to ask for rate buy downs as houses stay longer on the market. For sellers, you need to really pay attention to having a well-prepared home priced correctly, and don't get beaky if a buyer writes you an offer asking for a reduction in price and closing costs. First, thank the good Lord that you have an offer, and now let's negotiate.
So two things jumped out at that for me. Number one, you're talking about we got to have, I forget the number that you tossed out. It was a pretty big number of we need more. Kaiser, obviously, the concern is they always bump up against that urban growth boundary. There's only so many places they can go. Nobody wants L.A. sprawl. So where are we building houses?
Well, that's the challenge that we have. What we're building is infill. And then you see us going up. Right. And they passed legislation where you could take a city lot and build, I think it's up to a fourplex on a city lot.
How big is a lot? An average lot?
5,000 square feet.
So small.
Yeah, they're smaller. But like my daughter lives on a 5,000 square foot lot. They have the quote cottage, 1,800 square foot cottage in the front. Mm-hmm. And then there's some folks who have an 1,800 square foot cottage in the back with alley access to their garage. And then my kids have access to their house from the street side. So there's some creative things that are going on that way. And then, of course, we've got the ADUs going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like that. That's what we're having to look at is infill.
Yeah. So are you, say, going up, you're looking at condos and things like that? Because that's not single family housing then anymore.
Well, the condos have been slowed because we had legislation. I hope I get this right. I know my commercial agents will correct me if I'm wrong. But up until this legislative session, or last legislative session, there had been on condominiums, there was a 10-year warranty period for the developer. And it was just excessive. So if my furnace went out in 10 years in my condo, they were calling the developer to replace it because it was, quote, under warranty. That's what slowed the development of condominiums in our state. And that was supposedly corrected in the last session. So hopefully we'll see more condos going up, because I think there's more people, you know, that would enjoy that. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. So anyway.
Yeah. So the kind of arcing that I'm really seeing right now is we are in a market where planning ahead becomes so darn important, because whether it's, you know, not being able to use one of these quick lenders and kind of saying, this is in my long-term future, I want to make this move soon. It's getting out, getting the paperwork in order, the pre-approval stuff.
Yeah.
And then turning to the realtor, Amy, and saying, this is what we're approved for. This is what we're looking at. And be prepared to take 3-4 months in that finding the right place and getting everything signed off.
Yeah, it makes the experience so much better, because then you're not feeling the pressure. I mean, sometimes we do have those people and we can turn them pretty quickly. But, you know, oh, my gosh, my neighbor's house just went up for sale. I've been thinking about this. I want to jump now, which we can do those. But if you are thinking about purchasing in 2026, it makes so much more sense. I see this on social media all the time. I want to buy a house. Where do I start? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then 45 realtor jump in and say, oh, well, I can help you with that. No. The realtor is not where you start. You start with the lender, because we have to actually make sure that you can buy a home. You don't go talk to the car sales guy. I mean, I guess you do. That's not the best example, because they're going to then try and get you into something. But you, if you do that and you start that way, you could end up with a 10% interest rate, versus if you talk to somebody local that you trust, you know, for a car, you might end up with 5. So there is a purpose, and it doesn't cost anything. It's like, that's the big thing. People think calling me, I have a slot that you do a 15-minute you know, phone conversation, just, hey, like, I'm just inquiring, and we can just kind of get an idea, and then I can go over, hey, here's kind of the plan, here's the next steps. And then once we get through those first few steps and I've looked at your credit, we've made sure there's nothing that is misreporting on there, that's huge because it affects your interest rate. We want to do all those things before you're under contract and we have a 30-day deadline to take care of any problems. Like, let's address the problems first.
I 100% concur with Elizabeth. In fact, so much so that when someone calls our office first and says, I'm thinking about buying a house, and we talk about why that's important to them, the next step we're sending them to is Elizabeth before we ever bring them into the office to discuss how this process works for buying. We want to make sure that we don't want to be showing them houses that they then can't afford. That's terrible. That's torture.
Yeah.
But most people have no idea what they can afford or what they, you know. And so we get them to Elizabeth. So what she's saying is 100% spot on.
Well, all right.
And yeah, we have those reality checks too, where people are like, I want a $1,500 payment and I don't have a down payment. It's just, hey, you know what? I hear and understand, but realistically, a starter home is going to cost you probably $2,500 to $2,700 just based on the numbers that Amy's giving you. So we just want to make sure that they have a realistic expectation and they don't go in feeling disappointed and you know, deterred of home ownership right out of the get-go. We want to have that conversation. Maybe it's not right now, but here's how you get to yes.
Yeah, and with sticking with that theme, let's go ahead and take our last break. And when we come back, we'll talk about how long it does take to sell my house. You're listening to Real Estate Insights on Newsmakers at Noon. We'll be right back.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care and Cozy's New York Deli.
All righty, welcome back, everybody. We're wrapping up our Real Estate Inside show today with Amy McLeod and Elizabeth Smith, and we have been battling the gremlins all show, so thanks for being patient with us. Amy, I'm going to jump right to you.
Yeah.
How long is it going to take me to sell my house?
Well, in many markets today, it's taking anywhere from about 30 days in the hottest price points to 91 days to sell, depending on your location, price point, and condition. So if you're thinking about selling, the realistic expectation is it's going to take a few weeks to a couple months to get a solid offer. But not all houses sell at the same speed. So there's four major factors. The first one is price. That is the number one reason that houses sit on the market or they sell. And if a house is priced correctly from the beginning, it attracts the most attention from buyers during the first couple of weeks. And that's when your listing gets the most views online and the most showings. If it's priced too high, buyers will skip over it entirely. They won't even come look at it anymore because they see everything online. So if you hear yourself saying, we just haven't found the right buyer, you don't realize that when I show clients in a two-week period that over 10,000 people have seen their house in a feed from Realtor.com, Zillow, Redfin, you are being seen. So homes that start overpriced end up selling for less than they might if they'd priced correctly from the beginning, because people start talking about what's wrong with the house instead of what's right. The second factor is condition. I can't emphasize this enough. I am seeing over and over. I have a house that's, it's been well maintained, but I'm seeing houses that are 10 years older and they're buying it because it's in that HGTV condition, you know, repose gray, white, blah, 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 all of that. luxury plank. Well, yep. But buyers today are very sensitive to how a home looks when they first walk in. And if you're part of my generation that got told, you should buy the worst house in the neighborhood and fix it up, that's where you get your equity. Well, all of our kids, those millennials and Gen Zers, they watched all of us working our fannies off and they frankly don't want to do it. So you got to change. And it's simple things like fresh paint, clean carpet, clean new carpets. Good lighting, decluttering can make a huge difference. Homes that are clean and well-staged and move-in ready attract stronger offers and sell faster. The third factor is location and neighborhood demand. Some neighborhoods simply have more demand than others. So here, you know, a strong neighborhood is the Meadows and McNary Estates. So homes that are close to good schools, parks, shopping, or major employers often attract more buyers. if there's a very few homes available in a certain neighborhood, a well-priced home will sell quickly. And the fourth thing is market conditions. So we've been talking about that. The overall housing market role plays a role in how quickly a house sells. And what the housing market is will vary from price point to price point. If you have a $300,000 house in reasonable condition, you're going to see that thing fly off the shelf. If you have anything over $500,000, you're going to have to be ready to compete in the beauty contest. And that means you got to go in scrapping. So when mortgage rates are low and buyer demand is high, houses obviously sell faster. But when they rise or when they are where we are now, buyers become more cautious about affordability. So houses tend to stay on the market longer unless you're willing to, as I say, throw up in your mouth and price it a little bit less than what you were hoping. So right now, many markets across the country, we're seeing a balanced market. And that means that homes are still selling, but buyers have more time and they're being more discerning and they're making more demands. It's not a terrible thing. For most people, you're moving on to another house. You can't win at both ends. But if you can get your house sold at this end, then you can be a winner at the other end. So even if it takes 30 to 60 days to get an offer, that doesn't mean your process is finished either. Once we agree on a contract, there's typically another 30 to 45 days to close the deal. And that's while the buyer's completing inspections, the lender is finalizing the mortgage and the paperwork. So from the day you list your home to the day the sale closes, the entire process takes about 2 to 3 months in the average case. And the most important takeaway from this conversation is if your house is priced correctly and presented properly, then it has an excellent chance of attracting buyers and sellers within a reasonable time frame. And I would just say one final thought. Timing the market perfectly is impossible. Just don't even think that you're going to time it because you'll miss it. By the time you know what's happening in the market, you've missed it. So if you're wondering how long it might take to sell your specific home, then the best place to start is with us, with that value range that we can give you. And if you're serious about moving, then we can look at doing a full-blown market analysis to look at specific sales in your neighborhood and give you a realistic idea of pricing and timing. So
you should really work off your own timeline. Really just what your timeline is the timeline.
Yeah, if you want to be moving in June, then you should probably have your house ready to go in March. And people often think that, if you put your house on the market, then you just lose all control. Well, one of the things we negotiate is a closing date. So that's all part of it.
Yeah, I think everyone's had that experience where it's kind of like, going back 20, 30 years when you're going, my house hit this peak market in 2007. If I had just sold and walked away, everything would have been glorious. But, you just kind of, you can't time the market. You don't know what's going to happen and you either jump too soon or too late.
Right. Exactly. The example I always use is on September 10th, 2001, we were rocking and rolling in the second busiest season in the real estate calendar. And on September 12th, 2001, our phones died. And that's because what happened in between those 2 days was 9/11. So you never know. There can be the black swan event. So just like all these people for the last 4 years that have been waiting for the market to crash and it never happened.
Well, as always, good advice. And thank you, both of you, for always get great information from both of you. And we appreciate your expertise on this. And that is it for us today on this Real Estate Insights Tuesday. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.